at your service. It's the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts. To ask a question, call 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Now the host of the show, Rich Orris.
Hey, you are tuned into the Home Improvement Show right here on KMOX. I'm your host, Rich Orris. Like you said, thanks for starting your weekend off with us right here for the next couple of hours. This show is all about helping you take better care of your home, from routine maintenance and repairs to major remodeling projects, long-term planning. If you've got a question, anything about your home, feel free. Phone lines are open. 314-436-7900, whether it's a small fix that's maybe been nagging you for a while, a project that you didn't go quite as planned and you got some questions about it, a renovation you're just starting on and to think about, to just give me a call and we can talk it out. We'll talk through it together right here live on the air and each week on this show. That's kind of the focus. We focus on kind of practical, real-world advice, the kind of information that can help you really protect your home, avoid costly mistakes, and make some smart decisions about where to spend your time and money in your home. No matter if you're a seasoned DIYer, maybe you do all sorts of stuff around the house all the time, or sometimes you just want to understand what's going on before hiring a pro or how to look for a pro, this show is for you. So grab your favorite drink, take a look around your house, start thinking about what needs some attention, and then give us a call. Check in with us right here on KMOX. Again, 314-436-7900. That's 314-436-7900. And during the week, I'm running around visiting all sorts of clients, clients interested in some kind of remodeling, or maybe they have an issue, or maybe they want a kitchen remodeled or a bathroom remodeled or new siding around the house. Here at Mosby Building Arts, where I work, we do everything. Everything residential for you, so we can handle all of that, from some of these repairs all the way to major complete house remodels inside and out. Doesn't matter. We can take care of it. And I kind of run around and I meet with people and I talk about these projects and what they're thinking and try and give some good sound advice and just really, if we can just be a good consultant, just be a good advisor, best advisor that we can be with whatever you're having happen, that's kind of the goal of what I do. And it's the same goal that I have right here today for everybody, whatever you have. Again, one last time, write this down, 314-436-7900. Let's jump over to Bob and see what's happening with Bob this weekend. Hey, Bob, thanks for calling. What's going on?
Yeah, I've got a question. A friend of mine that's worked on her basement, and they pulled out insulation above her foundation and below the subfloor, each little pocket. Uh-huh. I was wondering if it's about 50% of it is gone. I was wondering, is it necessary to put that in? She's kind of hesitant to spend the money, but I think it's a good thing to do.
Yes. The straight answer is absolutely yes, Bob. Put that insulation back. There's multiple ways that you can perform that. Some more expensive than others, but I'll tell you, I'll kind of explain a situation that I see in basements often once they get finished, because when your basement is unfinished and it's wide open and air can mix and move around, and if you have air leaks, and most of your air leaks in a basement, pretty much all of them, either come from the basement windows or that what we call the band board that wraps around the house of that floor. It's sitting on top of concrete, so you got concrete, wood. They try and seal it. They use a bug shield, things like that, but sometimes it's a little wavy, so you got wood over wood. Sitting on wood, you get some gaps. They drill through it, and they put the electric through there and the cable lines and the gas lines and all sorts of utilities of the house come in and out of there through that board. So that's where you get the majority of cold or hot air into the basement during the summer or the winter. So you want to insulate that to keep that temperature difference out. But when you finish a basement and you close off the ceiling, now all that air that leaks is between your ceiling and the floor, and your ductwork's in there, and there's utilities and water lines in there. So if you have a hot water line in the summer, or your heat runs running hot air and you're leaking cold air, then you can get condensation on those pipes and it starts dripping on the ceiling. You think you have a leak when a lot of times it's really just the condensation from this ductwork or these water lines dripping onto that ceiling. So not only would I recommend, at a minimum, I'd put new insulation back wherever they took it out, at a maximum to air seal, I would take the rest of that insulation out and I would replace it with a spray foam. Now, this is going to be the most expensive type of insulation, and you'll need to do 100% of it. So they go around the whole basement, but they spray that foam. It can hit the concrete. It can hit the bottom of the subfloor. It will lock in all the air. It'll stop air infiltration 100% altogether. So not only will you get the temperature difference in the insulation value, but you'll stop that air from infiltrating in, and you may prevent water leaks, water stains, and work down the road inside of that ceiling. So depending on what kind of ceiling she's putting in, you could have drywall, you could have a drop ceiling. In the future, she could end up buying more drop ceiling panels to replace them. If you do a drop ceiling and say it's 5, 10, 15 years down the road, you may get to a point where the tiles look so different, you end up considering doing the whole ceiling, replacing all those tiles, because it's starting to look, you put a new one in an old and leave the old one and they just don't look the same, or they don't make that pattern anymore 10 years later. Or if it's drywall, you could end up patching, water sealing, stain blocking, and repainting. So the money you spend extra on insulation right now, you may end up saving yourself over the course of getting to enjoy this basement. How's that sound for you there, Bob?
Well, it sounds good, but she's never going to redo her basement. It's, you know, open. There's nothing down there.
Okay.
I think just putting up some, I don't know what value the R value should be.
Yeah, it's an R, like R13. It's a typical wall insulation that they use. So an R11 or R13 would work just fine.
That's fine, because she's not going to blow the insulation in, I'm sure.
Yeah, and if she's leaving it open where air can move and breathe and mix throughout the basement, she'll be good.
All right. I appreciate your help. Thank you.
All right. You are very, very welcome. Hey, we're going to jump into our first break here, but Wentz, if you can hang on for a couple minutes, and then everybody else, you want to jump in, you got something going on this weekend, let me know about it. Let's talk it out. 314-436-7900. We can talk that out right after this.
It's the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts. Once again, Rich Orris.
The first hour of the Home Improvement Show, off to a really quick start. That's awesome. Love it. We've got a lot coming up. We've got a lot going on. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, anything about around your house, 314-436-7900 finds me. right here. We've got some texts coming in as well, but we're going to go in order, jump right to Wentz and see what's going on there. Wentz, hey, how can we help you out?
Hey, Rich, love your show. I've got two questions about kitchen lighting. I'm replacing 2 4-foot overhead fluorescent lighting fixtures with LED, Honeywell LED fixtures that are wired. And I've put the first one in. I still have the second one wired in because it was still working. The first one didn't work. So I put the first one in, and it's not working at all.
Oh, really?
It's on just a regular two-way switch.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's not a switch on both ends or anything like that. It's just one switch that operates it.
Okay.
So I wired it in, and now neither of them are working.
Oh, okay.
But I haven't replaced the second one yet. Is it something that I have to do them both at one time in order to get them to work? Or?
No, absolutely not. I mean, typically you have a wire going either from the switch to the first fixture and then to the second fixture, and when you turn it on and off, it supplies both. So one of the fixtures should have two wires in it, where, you know, two sets of wires. There's a black, a white, and a ground, and one would have one set coming in, and one would have two sets coming in. And so if the first one that you did has like a loose wire, it didn't get wire nutted properly or tight, then it would also not work, but then the next light down the chain would not work. So if something's wired wrong in that first one, it may be cutting off power to the second one. Now there's plenty of ways to run this wire. Sometimes the wires go to the light switches or go to the light fixtures first, then to the switch and back. So there is multiple ways that those get installed and work. Let me ask you this. When you wired that light fixture, was there a black, a white, and a ground, or was there also a red wire?
I believe it's just the three wires. I have a pretty old house.
Okay. And so...
And it's the first light in the series, the one that has the multiple wires, like you described.
Okay, so it does have two sets of those wires. So what I would look at doing is getting back in there and getting an electrical tester and seeing if you have power to that light fixture, to those wires, and you turn the switch on and off. And you can buy a tester that you don't necessarily need to touch the wire with, because there's the kind where it's like a piece of metal and you got to actually touch the hot and the white or the ground at the same time and see if there's power. But they make them now where you basically just push a button and you put it next to that wire and it will make a sound and kind of light up and tell you that wire has power, so you can flick the switch on and off and see the power go away and the power come back. So that's kind of step one, is like, do you have power? Is it going there? And then you just need to kind of make sure that it got wired. If it has the power, it got wired appropriately, their wire nutted is tight and the wires are actually touching, so that it's then powering yours and powering the next one. If they're neither of them are working, I'm pretty suspicious that one of those wires pulled out or came loose and isn't, you know, the power's there, but it isn't supplying it to either light fixture.
So it's not that one is fluorescent and the other is LED.
No, because that's completely separate. The power goes to that light fixture and then it'll run that light fixture. So what it's telling me is you've lost power to both fixtures.
Okay. Well, I'm going to check that. And,
yep, so I would recheck
that
and see. Yeah, yes. Go ahead.
Okay, the second one is I have an overhead light that works fine, but I have a switch on both ends of the room. And for some reason now, you have to go to one side or the other to turn it on. You can't just use both switches. They both are working it as long as they're in the reverse order.
Yes. So something is wired that's called a three-way switch.
Okay.
And it basically means there's two switches and a fixture or a multitude of fixtures that it's running.
Right. And I replaced them both with three-way switches.
Yep. So something again is wired incorrectly there, like the red and the black are swapped or something, because you should be able to go to one switch, go up and down, and it should go on and off. And you should be able to go to the other one and go up and down, and it should go on and off. If you're having it where this one won't go on unless this one is down here, then there's something with that wires that got crossed. And what I might recommend is, because it's tricky and I can't really explain like which wires go where and all that very easily.
Even if
I were doing that, I would look it up. I have like... I'll show my age a little bit. I have some books and stuff like that I can look up all the different ways of rewiring that. But with AI and our internet and all the sources, I would say, you know, Google wiring three-way switches, and you should be able to find like the diagrams, and because there's also like three different ways to wire that, and it depends on which switch gets the power first. Or if the light fixtures get the power first, it's wired another way. So there's multiple ways to do that. And that's something you might need to figure out is like what houses the power? Like where does the power start from? Then you could use that diagram to make sure that you've put all the wires in the same place. And or what I always advise to with electrical, definitely electrical, is if you start to get into a sticky situation or you're like, gosh, I'm still just not positive, just, you know, call the professionals, call an electrician, and it's a major safety issue. So make sure you get that right.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Good luck.
You answered it all.
Yep.
Thank you, Chris.
You are very welcome. I appreciate you calling and listening and that you like the show. And that's all wonderful. Appreciate it a bunch. Let's jump to Danny real quick and see what's happening there. Hey, Danny, what's going on?
Good morning. Hey, how are you getting along this morning?
I'm getting along great.
Hey, I got a quick question. I didn't know if you had a remedy or maybe any of the listeners did. Got an old toilet. Well, it's only about 5 years old in a farmhouse with hard water, and it's just the color is discolored on the inside of it, and my wife's used a scouring stick, and we've tried bleach, and we've tried every other thing, and I didn't know if there was something short of replacing the toilet that we could use to get it to shine like a new one again.
I am sure I would definitely say, this is a good one for a shout out to all the listeners out there that might have some home remedies that have worked really well for them. What I'm hearing is like, is there like an orangish looking stain around the bowl?
Like a mud colored in the bottom of the bowl.
Okay.
And then,
So we
scrubbed, or she scrubbed on it and scrubbed on it, and it's still not coming clean, even with the scouring sticks that you can buy to get rid of the calcium deposits from the hard water.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it looks like hell.
Yeah, so it may be hard, and you may not be maybe in there so hard that you can't get it out. But the calcium deposit removers is where I was going to go to. Is like, there's one called CLR, the cleaner that if you soak it in CLR, and really get it really wet, get it really, you know, on there good, maybe even fill it up a little bit where it's just all in there, and let that sit like overnight and try and eat away at it.
All right.
That time might be your best friend, is leaving it on there in any of those calcium cleaners or any of the remedies of, if people call in and maybe they've done something and had some success with that, all of those will probably be the same, like let it soak, let it sit overnight. But there are some home remedies. I just don't have them off the top of my head. But I'd start with CLR. It's calcium, lime, and rust.
Yeah, we just picked them up the other day.
Yep, perfect. You're on the right track, I think. Yep, good luck with that, Danny.
All right.
Appreciate it. All right, no problem. I appreciate you. Appreciate the conversation. And we're going to jump into our middle hour break here for everybody. Tom, if you can stick around for a couple minutes, and everybody else, if you can jump in when you're ready, 314-436-7900. We'll have more conversations, more questions right after this. All right. We are back. We got a lot going on, but we'll have time. 2 hours. We'll have time for everybody today. 314-436-7900. Get you here with me. And you can text in a question that way as well, and we'll see if we can get to some text questions as well. So we've got Tom on the line. Let's jump straight to Tom and see what's happening there. Hey, Tom, you got some kind of remedy for us?
Yes, Rich. I've installed a bunch of those LED lights in place of regular fixtures. And they come, you know, you run your 120-volt circuit to this part in the LED, and then it'll have a little wire where the connector goes to the LED. And that little connector is so easy to put in wrong.
Yeah.
You have to look, and they're not made very well. You have to look. There's a little prong that fits in a slot in that connector. But you can turn it wrong, and it'll still go in there. So have him take that out and make sure, look at it, and make sure you're putting that in that little connector correctly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I definitely, and when you're wiring any fixtures like that, it's like the wire coming in is hard, it's bigger, and then you got this little bitty, braided wire that's just like a bunch, it can be difficult to get all those things connected correctly for sure.
Yeah, it's so, you just think, oh, I can go in there any way you can get it. No, there's a certain way it goes in, and you have to look. My other comment on using those things you can buy that just light up or make a noise to check for if you have voltage there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess it's better than nothing. But it can lead you down the wrong path because you want to know that you want a meter and you want to check from the hot wire, which is usually black, to the neutral wire.
Yep.
You want to know that you're actually, that you have a circuit because you could have a voltage in the hot wire. You go to the neutral and you don't.
Yeah.
That means you got something wrong in the neutral wire.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, and that's why those are really they're that's just a typical, like, is there some kind of power getting there, or is there power in that area? They're probably used a little bit more for just making sure if you're working in an area and there's wires and you cut the power, making sure the power's off, stuff like that.
Right.
But yeah, that's a quick find. Do I even have power there? And yeah, if you're flipping the switch on and off and nothing, no noise is happening, yeah, then you got to go deeper and be like, wait a minute, there's no power. So yeah, no, there's definitely, in figuring out which leg has the power, that's not gonna do that whatsoever. Yep, totally agree with you there, and they are difficult to get in there. So yeah, appreciate the feedback. Hopefully Wentz is still on there.
Switches.
Mm-hmm.
People, if you're wiring a three-way switch, you can play with that all day long and move the wires around. As long as you never hook a neutral wire to a three-way switch or to any switch, as long as you don't ever do that, it's okay. You're not going to blow something up or trip a breaker. As long as you don't ever put a neutral wire on a three-way switch or a single-pole switch, you can play with that all day long, and it's not going to hurt.
Yep. All right. Hey, appreciate it, Tom. Thanks for the advice. I think we got some more advice here for the toilet. We got a remedy here with Alan with us. Hey, do you have a remedy for the homemade remedy for the toilet? For
yes, I do.
For Danny, what do you use?
Well, I tell you what, I have the same problem. We live over here in Clinton County. Our water comes from the Shoal Creek, and it is very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And we have this old toilet. Now, we've had this for probably 20 years.
Okay.
And I spent a lot of money on stuff that I bought specifically from a plumber. Now, it worked, but he wanted $30 a gallon for it.
Okay.
So I just read the ingredients, and the ingredients says hydrochloric acid.
Ah.
Well, that's muriatic acid. That's what bricklayers use to remove mortar from bricks. And that is calcium deposit.
Yeah. Yep, lime, yep.
So I go to the hardware store, and my friend down there sells me a gallon of it for $10. It's concentrated, so I diluted about 50-50 with water.
Yeah.
And it works great. Now, you can let it sit overnight, but as it works, it gives off a rotten egg odor. So my advice to you is to go ahead and close the bathroom door and open the window while it works. And you flush her down, buddy, and it is clean, lickety-split.
Nice. Hey, that's awesome. I appreciate that. And you got 2 gallons for $10 because you,
well, the
you
deal
get the water
is,
down.
I got enough muriatic acid here to last the rest of my lifetime, and there'll be some left for my boy when he goes through my stuff.
Yeah. Yep. That's awesome. That's
okay,
great.
Buddy.
Yep.
Hey,
appreciate
thanks.
The, yep. Appreciate the call in and the work there, because there's a lot of different remedies like that we could look at and go through. And there's a there you can find a ton of them, from vinegar to boric to all kinds of what you mix together. But having the community to come in and be like, I've tried this and it was a similar situation and it worked really well, is completely awesome. Appreciate it. So love the feedback, because the real world experience is really the best thing here of what we've done, what we've seen, how we learn from our mistakes, and which remedy actually works for us. So appreciate Alan for that. Jan, if you could hang on for a couple minutes, we're going to take a real quick break, and you will be next. When we return, everybody else, 314-436-7900. We'll talk to you all in a bit.
You're listening to The Home Improvement Show, sponsored by Mosby Building Arts. Once again, Rich Orris.
Last segment of the first hour, but hey, a whole nother hour to come. After the next break, after the news break. So get ready, take a look around, see what you think you need, and then give us a call, 314-436-7900. We got Jan on the line here. Let's see what's happening in Jan's garage. Hey, how you doing?
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. I've got a 40-year-old home that we built, and it's the ground has settled, and so the garage floor was actually up off the ground. We noticed it was hollow. So we had the cement broken out and replaced the floor, the driveway, the front porch, all at the same time.
Okay.
And they refilled with rock and then poured the cement. Well, now what I'm noticing is one corner of the garage, the pillar that's there is seems like it's pulling away. The sill has broken part of the way down the garage. It's like the foundational sill.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know who to get a hold of to have somebody come out, look at it, and tell me what to do. but it is noticeable from the street that that part of the garage, the roof, is actually starting to sag. And so I can see all sorts of problems coming my way if I don't get it fixed.
Yes. So, and sometimes, too, if the foundation is settling, sometimes that actually, when you see that garage settling, that's a part of it, because as the foundation starts to settle, it'll start to kind of lean away slightly. So then everything underneath there kind of moves, all that fill and rock kind of starts to move away. So a lot of times, when we see a garage floor going down, we do advise look at that foundation at the same time, because make sure that's not going down as well. So if your foundation's going down, you're going to want a foundation repair company that can, they'll peer that either from the inside or the outside. Unfortunately, if it's easier to do it from the inside, they'll end up breaking some kind of square holes through your new concrete floor to be able to dig down and peer that foundation. But that's where I would guide you to look, have a foundation company inspect that garage foundation. And while they're there, they can walk the whole home, look for any signs of anything anywhere, and just double check everything. And then they can offer whatever you need, some kind of peering, wall anchors. There's different fixes depending on what those foundation walls are doing as well.
Okay.
So I personally, and here at Mosby Building Arts, we use a company called Stratum Structural. But there's a lot of foundation companies out there. Stratum Structural Systems is who we use when we find this, and who I advise getting into foundation repairs. So you can look them up and give them shout, and they will come out and let you know what's going on.
Okay, thank you very much.
Absolutely, no problem. Very welcome. And that is also another kind of common issue of going first at doing all that concrete at once is very wise. And when they build a house and they backfill around it and they backfill the garage and rock, the driveway right outside the garage, underneath the front porch, all the overdig from the foundation, definitely it all settles. It starts to settle years later. It's going down. When you get a new home, you can suspect that you'll be adding soil around the foundation wherever there's landscaping, grass, and any of that, to where as it starts to sink, you want that water moving away. So you add soil, reseed and straw, and get your grass back, or you pull the mulch away, you add soil, put your cloth back, put your mulch or your rock, all that back, and keep that water moving away from the house. But underneath the driveway, underneath the porch, underneath the rear patio, you can't get to those areas. So you can either consider new and get it tamped, and or you can consider mud jacking, poly jacking, a little bit better version of mud jacking. Those are all, it's kind of like good, better, best. Is, mud jacking is good. It can last some time. It can work for you. Poly jacking, it would probably last and hold up a little bit longer than mud jacking, but then replacing, pinning to the foundation, tamping your rock, getting things back is kind of that best scenario. And it is wise, like Jan did, is to say, okay, well, let's look at all of this at once, because the more you do it once, then the less it's going to cost per job, per foot. The last foot is always the cheapest, and the first foot is always the most expensive, and then everything in between. So definitely worth thinking about all of those areas. And the basement insulation we were discussing earlier, going around the band board of the basement to seal, to insulate well, to keep cold air out. A question I see and get all the time in basements with that fiberglass, what we call bat style insulation that they kind of cut and they put it between all the floor joists, or they'll just run long runs down the side where the floor joists aren't tying in. And a question we hear all the time, they'll see that insulation and they'll see black on it. The pink or the yellow will be turning black. And everybody always asks the same question, like, oh my gosh, do I have mold? Is that mold? And typically, for the most part, what that is it's dirt. It's just dirty. When you get so much air infiltration around that foundation and around where the wood meets the foundation and where wood meets wood or where there's a hole drilled, air will blow or be pulled through fiberglass insulation. And with air is dust and dirt. So it starts to get dirty over the years, looks black. So 90% of the time when you see that on your insulation, that's air infiltrating in, getting that insulation dirty, and you really just need to air seal to keep that temperature out, keep that cold air out. So the best way, like we were talking about, basically foam spray that entire BAM board all the way around. Well, the downside to that is inspecting for termites later. So there's kind of positives and negatives to almost anything that you do. Not just in a home, but in your life. I mean, everything, every decision, every car, every house, every decision you make, there's almost a positives and negatives to everything. So you got to kind of weigh those situations. If your foundation is good and high up out of the ground, then you can inspect for termites and watch for mud tunnels and see most of the outside, then you could be okay. Another version of that is to basically just remove the fiberglass insulation. You can even save it to put it right back. Get just the cans of the spray foam. They're I don't know what they cost, like $8, $9, $7, $8, $9, $10. Get a can or two and just follow that foundation. Spray that wherever the wood meets the concrete. Spray it wherever you see a gap, wherever you see a wire coming in. If there's a hole with a little skinny wire in it, just kind of poke that nozzle in there, give it a little squirt, fill that up, and you can block a good bit of that air infiltration that way, and then you can put all that insulation back, and that can be a good way to get the same version. It might not be quite as well as 100% of covering everything, but it could be very good, and it can help a lot. And I've actually fixed cold floors with insulation around the band board of a house. So, hey, if you got anything else for me, we're going to get into our next hour coming up, 314-436-7900. We got some texts we'll go over too. Get your calls in, everything going. We'll do our news break, and we'll be back for hour two right after this.